Right now, I'm going to review a documentary that I watched last night. And I want to thank a buddy who sent me a text about a week ago, and he said, you've got to see this documentary on Showtime called New Wave, Dare to Be Different. And he said, it's right in your wheelhouse. It talks about a radio station and how they were instrumental in introducing all of the bands that we grew up with. If you grew up in the any time from late 70s to the early 90s, this was your music. This was your musical wheelhouse. And I cannot tell you, George and Gordon, how much the two of you need to watch this documentary. It is so in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I was a new waver.
All the bands that you guys loved when you were in junior high, high school, college, they talk to everybody in this documentary. And they bring up every new wave band and this radio station, WLIR. LIR, standing for Long Island Radio, was a tiny radio station on Long Island in New York, and they basically introduced all of these new wave post-punk bands to the United States.
Me which bands LIR broke in this country, that is a very long list.
Echo and the Bunnymen.
The Clash.
The Pretenders.
And the Replacements.
Talking Heads, Blondie.
Smith.
We were the first to play Madonna.
Spandau Ballet and Go West.
U2, I mean, the station had impeccable taste.
We broke out of man. There's no question about it. Psychedelic First.
Alphaville.
The Alarm.
Wang Chung and ABC.
Nobody else was playing these bands.
Human League. We played Prince before anybody else.
Wall of Voodoo with, you know, I'm on the Mexican radio.
XTC, Gang of Four.
R.E.M.
Depeche Mode.
Joan Jett and the Ramones. They were like our house bands.
First Erasure, then Assembly, Yaz, Squeeze.
Big Audio Dynamite.
Paul Young, Howard Jones.
First station to play Roxanne by the Police.
Pet Shop Boys, West End Girls.
I Want Candy.
99 Left Balloon.
Tin Tin Kiss Me.
Rock Lobster.
Rock the Casbah.
Electric Avenue. We're gonna rock down to
Video Killed the Radio Star.
Don't change.
There's Light That Never Goes Out.
Blue Monday.
Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
Right down the house.
Talk,
World at Film.
Ice House.
Ice Sky Dog and Tesh Mug.
Listen, Neil, Petra Boys.
Do they idle Rock and Seagull?
Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Elvis Costello.
Hey, this is Fred, the B-52.
This is Robert from The Cure. You're listening to 92.7 LIR.
One day you were listening to LIR, and then the next day you went to turn it on, and it was gone.
And we're going to get to how it disappeared here momentarily, but WLIR was this tiny station, and for a long time, they played big band stuff, kind of like our frequency before we switched to all sports.
Right.
They played just middle-of-the-road music. And then they switched their format to rock and roll, but they played traditional rock and roll. They played the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, a lot of Southern rock, Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd. They played Led Zeppelin, Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, REO Speedwagon, the Eagles. It was just all mainstream stuff. And that's what all the other stations, the rock stations in New York and around America, were playing. Just that mainstream, kind of corporate, homogenized rock and roll. Not that those bands are bad bands by any stretch, but it was the same in every town on every radio station.
Right.
Well, Dennis McNamara was the program director at WLIR, and in 1982, he got really interested in all of the music coming out of the United Kingdom. And he decided that they were going to change their format. So the listeners in the New York area, you know, they're tuning in expecting to hear just kind of this basic rock and roll. And WLIR had this big announcement that they are changing the format. They didn't call it New Wave. They said, we are becoming a new station. It's WLIR New Music. And this was the first song they played when they switched formats. So Billy Idol who doesn't sound anything like the Beatles or the Allman Brothers or Billy Joel, suddenly WLIR introduces this new wave, this new music to New York City. And Billy Idol's interviewed in this, and of course, he's, you know, our mascot in Strike Force. When we hear Billy Idol, we spring into action and fight crime on this show. Guys, they interview everybody. Billy Idol to Joan Jett to Cy Kiernan to whoever was involved in the new wave movement back then. They are featured in this documentary, and they catch up with them modern day, so you get to see all these guys modern day and what they look like.
Who looked the hardest?
Wow, that's like a 100-way tie for first.
Oh, no. Yeah, they're older now.
But they were on the cutting edge, and they introduced new wave post-punk to America. No other radio stations were playing this stuff. And what they would do, Dennis McNamara would go over to London, and he would walk the streets and go to the record labels and go into the record stores, and he would find the cutting edge stuff. And they would set up orders, and they would have these imports. Remember when you go to a record store and get an import, how cool you thought that was?
Oh, yeah. Imports.
Well, they would set up a delivery of imports every Thursday, and it would arrive at LaGuardia in New York on Thursday afternoon. They would drive, they would get the records, and that weekend they would debut all these imports. And it ticked off the record companies, because the record companies back then had a schedule. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to release this song in the UK. Then we're going to give it 6 months, and then we're going to release a single in America, and then we're going to give it 6 more months, and then we'll release the album. Well, the record companies hated WLIR because LIR was getting these imports off the plane on Thursdays and releasing these songs and albums a year ahead of schedule in America.
Wow.
So no other radio station in America had Dancing With Myself or any of the songs that were coming out of the United Kingdom.
It was really... I'm sorry, were you about to add something? I was going to say, that was right when we were in high school, and the first time I heard anything like this, it was around that same time, early 80s, and it was different, because I grew up on the Stones, Beatles, Lynyrd Skynyrd, all that, and the first thing I heard was U2, and I heard Boy, and it just struck me as, this is different.
Well,
and this is really a different sound, and that's what totally got me into it.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because U2 is featured prominently, and we have WLIR to thank for introducing our favorite band to America.
Some of the new things that were coming out that were way ahead of their times, that were just starting to be released in England or Ireland or somewhere. And I got this album, Boy, with this great picture of this kid on it. And I went, okay. And he goes, this is a garage band, a band that's been together since high school from Dublin. Loved it. I Will Follow to this day is one of my very, very favorite songs. You could just sit and listen to this band that just was different. They were fresh, the energy, the whole production, everything.
Did 10 years with U2, which was a great thrill. And I remember very distinctly hearing I Will Follow on LIR, first U2 song I ever heard. And I went, wow, who's that?
This is U2's band.
The music station was in Manhattan. The FM stations were WPLJ and WNEW. And I remember that neither of those would play U2. They were really quite conservative. And so it was really vital for us that WLIR was around.
They were about the most traditionally set up band that you could possibly imagine. You know, bass, guitar, drums, and an arrogant singer in the best possible way. A showman.
To see U2 play on a foot and a half high stage was unbelievable, you know, and they were loud, they were good, and they were just... Wow, you just knew they were great.
This was a band that everyone should have loved, but it took albums. I mean, it took until the Joshua Tree before people really came around, not the LIR listeners.
WLIR was playing Boy in October and War and introducing U2 to America. And in fact, when they came back around on the Unforgettable Fire Tour and they played the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, Bono specifically thanked WLIR
Oh, wow.
For paving the way for U2 to be exposed in America.
Yeah, once they started, then, you know, some stations around the country, like the Zoo here, started Sunday nights. They would play, it's like a two-hour window, I want to say, the rock and roll alternative. Mm-hmm. And that's what that's when I first started hearing. My friends that introduced me to it started hearing. I guess they got their cue there from Long Island. Because it was, yeah, if you played anything but traditional rock, it wasn't well received. And there was a definite dividing line, too. I've told you that story that I went to the Zoo concert for $1.97 at Reunion Arena. And I was there to see The Fix, but Mitch Ryder was there, Eddie Money was there. And the guy sitting behind us booed The Fix.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because that guy was a genius.
I can't repeat what he called, what kind of music it was, but you know, we almost got in a fight because we love The Fix and we love this new sound, and they were just like, this sucks, not going to be around, this ain't rock and roll. And
go on.
Well, and I was amazed at and reminded about how primitive it was. Music wasn't digital. You couldn't go on the internet and get whatever song you wanted. So it really was as primitive as we have to get the record off the plane and play it. And that's why people in Dallas weren't exposed to it, or people in L.A. weren't exposed to it, because it had to physically migrate. The record had to physically migrate west in order to be played.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how far we've come. And because WLIR was introducing this European wave to America, other bands followed, other alternative or new wave American bands. For example, the Talking Heads opened for, I think it was the Ramones, or I can't remember who it was, but so it exposed this New York crowd to the Talking Heads, and they opened the door for the B-52s and for REM, all of these new wave American bands that rode the wave that was coming from Great Britain. And WLIR reminded me so much of our college radio days, because this is the 80s, right, when we were going to North Texas and we were at KNTU. The equipment was exactly the same. The WLIR staff joked that LIR stood for low-income radio because they had beaten-down cart machines. These are the tapes that looked like 8-track tapes that you used to play songs on. Their equipment was just bottom of the barrel.
Two turntables,
yeah. Terrible microphones, couches that were all torn up, that when they have a guest, they make them sit on couches with potato chips on it. Just, it was really, they were in a tin building on top of a 7-story building on Long Island. But they became cult legends. This radio station, it reminded me a lot of The Ticket, in that the listeners were just bonkers about the station, and they were part of the cult, and they were part of the lingo. And they said that WLIR was not a radio station, it was a lifestyle. And it reminded me of all of us at the station and all of the P1s, everybody who's a part of the Ticket family. We all have our own language, and we think in drops, and we speak in Ticket language, and there are so many things in our normal life that remind us of the Ticket. And it was the same thing on Long Island in the 80s. It was a lifestyle. And the people, they told the story once of the WLIR van was driving on Long Island, hit a patch of ice, and slammed into this car. And the driver of the car that got hit got out and was so happy because it was the WLIR van.
Dude, it's LIR!
Yeah, it was the LIR van that totaled his car, but he didn't care because he was having an interaction with WLIR.
That's crazy. And, you know, all this time later, we still have such formulated music radio. So few music stations are willing to walk out there on a limb and say, this is different, and let's play this.
There's no doubt. That's what McNamara, the program director, talked about. He said today it's all corporate.
Yeah.
And the corporations who run the radio stations are scared to play cutting-edge music, which led me to the question, is there a rock movement out there now that's anything like New Wave? Is there a cutting-edge form of rock and roll?
It's so fragmented now, and there's just so many different things. But, yeah, I think there's good stuff that doesn't get played. And I think in the country genre, I think in the rock genre, I still think you could do that and be different if someone would just dare to do it like they did.
Stations are too scared, though, because they're afraid no one will want to advertise. They're afraid that if they go different, that the ratings won't be there,
yeah,
and thus the advertising won't be there. So they're really frozen with fear to make a move like that. As I mentioned, they talked to all of these legends. They talked to your daddy, Cy Kiernan, from The Fix.
Yes.
Although you would be conflicted when you watch him because he rags on Reagan.
Ooh.
And he talks about
how... I was conflicted back in the 80s because I was a Reagan fan, but there was part of me that was like, yeah, man, this is our generation. And I was like, well, let's take it easy on Ronnie a little bit.
He talks about how most of the bands of that era, they hated Reagan.
Yeah.
And they thought Reagan and Margaret Thatcher were the devil because those two were introducing, as they said, materialism. He said, we weren't neighbors anymore. It had become a race to see who could get more good stuff with your neighbor.
Yeah.
And so he had some hot sports opinions. But still, he looked a little weathered, but it was good to see Cy. They did a whole segment on New Wave and how it was the first time that rock and roll had changed since the 50s. He said, you know, a lot of people interviewed said since the 50s it was the same. Guitar, drums, lead singer, nothing different until the late 70s and early 80s, New Wave and punk introduced, post-punk, introduced this new instrument, the synthesizer. And they talked about how all these traditional bands would use keyboards, but that to travel with a keyboard setup was a monumental undertaking because you needed all these different keyboards and these huge patch boards to make it all work. But the synthesizer was one tiny little keyboard, and all these bands could just tuck it under their arm, show up at their gig, plug it in, and there they could make this sound. And all of these bands used a synthesizer, most of them.
And they did something with them, too. Flock of Seagulls made a different sound. Rupert Greenall of The Fix made just a totally new wall of sound with it. And it was, I really liked it because I was a Todd Rundgren fan, too. And I thought, man, someone's finally doing something with the keyboards that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like it was almost a requirement in those days to have a keyboard player. That was as legitimate as a guitarist in a band.
Yeah.
They also talk about the fashion in the 80s, and my God, it was
horrible.
It was a high point for music, but a low point for fashion. Shoulder pads for men and women, mohawks, puffy hair, puffy pants, balloons as jewelry.
Horrible.
Tank tops horrible. With a sweat over it, but kind of pulled down. Just awful. Well, so much of it also reminded me of The Ticket in that they were talking about how their signal was really weak on WLIR-FM, 92.7.
Really late.
And they had to battle through a weak signal. But you know what? Like The Ticket listeners, especially in the early days when we were only on AM, the WLIR listeners loved having to fight through static to find this gold nugget on the radio dial. They made it, it made it feel like it was even more of a reward because you kind of had to fight the static. And you know what? I always loved that about our AM signal here on The Ticket. And to this day, I don't listen to our FM signal. I only listen to our AM signal because it's a little staticky and it makes me feel like I'm listening to this renegade radio station.
Yeah, I can understand that. If it's good enough, they'll fight through the static to listen to you, buddy.
Yes. They'll find you.
That's what the laddie always told us.
If you're good enough, they'll find you, buddy.
So they flipped formats and went to new music or new wave in 1982. They lasted 5 years.
That's it.
That's it.
Dang.
In 1987...
That's about how long we thought we were going to last, too.
Yeah.
You thought we'd last that long?
In 1987, unbeknownst to the staff at WLIR, the FCC had been embroiled, and their owners had been embroiled in this license controversy forever. And when it came to a head, they didn't even know if they had a license or if it was valid. And they one day walk to work, and they get a letter from the FCC, a cease and desist, that actually came over the wire.
Man.
And they had to shut it down that day. They were the...
That day.
They were arguably the biggest cult station in America, the biggest groundbreaking station in America. The FCC gave them a cease and desist, and they played Sid Vicious. Now the time is near.
Uh-huh.
Not Emmett's way, but...
My way.
My way. And then they signed off for good. And the listeners were in tears. Man. They couldn't believe it. WLIR's management said, we're going to make a comeback on another frequency. They never did. That station died after 5 years. Which made me think about The Ticket and our cult station being around for 25 years. And I hope we never take that for granted.
Hope we never get that notice.
We will one day. But I hope we don't take it for granted that we've been able to keep a cult station alive for 25 years.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend the All documentary right. New Wave, Dare to be Different on Showtime. It is great.